given the work that you guys have done. And I'll say it in a minute.
Thank you, everyone, for being here today. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Thank you so much, Councilman Boylan, for sitting down with me today.
Sure.
I wanted to briefly discuss and talk about this J bill resolution that we hope to be bringing in front of council very shortly. And I was just sort of saying it to you a second ago, but the incredible work that you did with the Critical Quality of Life Committee, it would be such a disservice to the hours of labor that you all put together to not bring any of these solutions to the fold, especially in the very near-term future. It's why we're sitting here today. So I briefly wanted to kind of tell you, and because I believe Alan DeVault, who's the head of the executive director of Build Up Downtown, has just been harassing us council members and elected officials, hounding us to find a solution for something that we talk about maybe daily. Anyone who I know comes downtown specifically talks about one impediment to our growth, and that is homelessness. Those that are unhoused, they're as I drove up today, so many of them were just standing outside of the library. They're kind of everywhere, and it's not so much that it's a them problem, right? But it's a perception issue, and it's a government probably isn't providing the solutions that are necessary to help prevent and end the problem that currently exists. And there's so many pieces to that puzzle, and much of which you talked about during your meetings. So when Mr. DeVault came to me with this J bill and said that he already spoke with members of the legislative delegation who are willing to carry it, it made me realize, okay, we have a real possibility for moving this thing forward. And I'm sure you've read over it. I mean, you're familiar with this process.
Sure.
Certainly.
Not necessarily for us to do the work ourselves, because we're very good at a lot of things. Clearly, as a recommendation of our committee, was the opportunity to take a full deeper dive into the appropriate the field, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that completely.
I would be honored if you were a co-introducer with this. And I will say part of the reason why I am a co-introducer is I was the vice chair of the Changing Homelessness Continuum of Care Board. So it's not that I'm just kind of walking off the street saying, let me dive into this policy issue. Your expertise and your leadership on it was a major reason why I wanted you to be a part of this. So I'm so grateful to you for wanting to do so. But, I just want to make sure people knew that. That's really what kind of drives me to be in this position, because we talk about it often, how a dedicated funding source could really do wonders, and creating a homeless trust, right, which is what Miami-Dade does. And we're going to need to have conversations with some of the folks down there, because I believe I've already kind of heard, Alan and I had sort of spoken about it, as well as Don and I, that, we might have folks who say, well, I want all phases. I want to know everything that we're going to be doing. I want to know what the homeless trust will look like on day one when it starts, assuming it ever starts, because this is just giving us a tool in the toolkit. So some of those questions we kind of need to figure out a better way to navigate. For those in the audience and for those in general, and Alan, I hope that you'll kind of come up here and speak to it as well. I mean, this is really just giving Duval County the option to give ourselves a dedicated funding source.
And absolutely. And even in the context
context of that, if you go back and take a look at the strategic plan, it was approved. There was $100,000 set aside in the front to do a little deeper dive. Focus on what does the model look like?
What does the fund, not only what does the funding model look like and the appropriateness and the need for it, but what would the vehicle be? How it would be.
Absolutely.
So I think that is part and parcel with what I would appreciate this board in. If we come back and kind of see where that strategic plan initiative is. It was approved fully by the council as part of a larger resolution, but I think that's part of it. As you said, this is informing the state. This is not the only path. There are other paths we've had to learn from
July.
And if we have a delegation that's willing to do so, right? I mean, that's the other thing that makes it so unique to this situation and so timely, is that they're willing to act now, and based on conversations that Alan's had and that I've had, and I think that's a huge thing. Alan, do you mind kind of coming up here and sort of speaking a little bit to how we got to this point and why Build Up Downtown is really driving this conversation?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for having me. My name's Alan DeVault. I'm the executive director of Build Up Downtown. I come kind of at this in two different ways, from the building up downtown and the economic development. You know, in our just under 2 years of being in existence, we found that homelessness is absolutely the largest hindrance of economic development downtown. And that's ones that we want to go forward. And it's also in all the surveys that DVI does from visitors, residents, and workers who are currently downtown is always their number one challenge. So, you know, from that aspect, you know, we think this is a potential great tool to use. I'm also a former restaurateur for many years here in Jacksonville, and know firsthand that, you know, we as a group like to support homelessness. We've supported Sulzbacher Changing Homelessness. We're big supporters, or were me and the previous, of Feeding Northeast Florida. So, you know, any tool that can be used, and I was lucky enough to find out about this at the CQLI meetings. a gentleman named Manny Saria, I think, came in and told us about it. And so that day I started to sort of think about how Jacksonville could utilize this and started talking to some of my restaurateur friends and to get their, you know, gauge their feedback and gauge their thoughts on it. And in general, it is relatively positive because, you know, permanent source of funding would be important. So, you know, I've done a lot of research. I was able to find out that, you know, one of the ways, the particular wording in it is we're Duval County is not allowed currently to implement this. The technical wording is that any county as defined by a certain statute, well, in that definition, Duval County doesn't fit. So had some more conversation with delegation members and others and thought that perhaps a J bill might be a way to make those slight changes so that we could get into what I kind of refer to as phase one. And phase one is really just about unlocking the opportunity to do that. The way Miami did it back in the 90s is they kind of fixed and got it set up in the state first. Then in 93, they put together a commission to kind of look at it further and do what I call phase two, which is, you know, inform and engage the public, the hospitality industry, and countywide discussions. And then in 94, they did kind of phase three, which was implemented by city council or commission vote and into law. And since then, they've gotten up to this year, they expect to see $40 million to help. And 15% or more goes to the shelters for domestic violence. And then the remainder goes for services, job training, and housing for homelessness. And what I've seen Miami-Dade do in the past 6 or 7 years really focus on permanent supportive housing. They spend probably over 65%, I think, of their budget is just on housing, the rest on services, and a really small amount on administration. But the workers and the staff there is self-funded by this, so it is a division of the county, but it's been really positive. And then further research for Duval County and talking with some former tax collectors, there's also a hotel and motel component to it that goes directly toward promoting tourism. We kind of estimate that even though population-wise and total tax sales tax revenue collected is about 35%, based on market conditions, we think that Duval could get up to 25% of the restaurant portion, so up to $10 million a year. And then on the hotel-motel, we kind of brought it down to 20%, so that could be up to $2 million for further tourism. You know, tons of research on all the phases and all the other things involved. I'm happy to answer any questions beyond that.
Thank you, Alan. I know I don't have any questions. Do you?
Just a comment. I appreciate the work.
Absolutely. And that's why I've been working closely with Ms. Gilman and Ms. Funkhauser, because I've needed a crash course in homelessness and, you know, the intricacies and the importance of all the different services, and I'm getting one.
And so, Don Gilman, CEO of Changing Homelessness, would you like to kind of say a few words about this? I believe you brought the Miami-Dade County model to the Critical Quality of Life Committee.
Thank you so much for asking me to speak. Excuse me, my name is Don Gilman. I'm the CEO of Changing Homelessness. So two things on this. Miami-Dade has worked with this model for 25 years. And they have, it has evolved, as you might imagine, since the mid-90s through today. I will say, I believe as a result of them having this guaranteed flexible funding, they have been able to build up their system of care to really work on reducing the number of people who are experiencing homelessness. And it also allows them to then take that expertise and go secure other funding sources. Miami-Dade COC was the only continuum of care within Florida that received a award from HUD last year specifically for reducing the number of unsheltered persons. They received $20 million over 3 years. Because they already had the expertise, they had the guarantee from the trust that they could provide the services, the wraparound services, to their three different housing authorities to be able to put a package together to show how they could rapidly move a large number of people off the streets and directly into housing. So that is one of the benefits with that. As we talked in CQLI, I think both of you were there on the day, for nonprofit agencies, for us to build a program, we need some baseline of funding to know that if we start a program in October, we can still pay those people next October. If we have put people into housing, we can still, if we have guaranteed their rents for a certain amount of time, we can still pay those rents, that there is a more continued funding stream.
And one of the things that I really appreciate about the Miami-Dade Homeless Trust, and for those of you that are not familiar, there's a massive military installation in the Miami-Dade area. It's the Southcom headquarters. As I understand it, veteran homelessness down in Miami-Dade is zero.
Miami-Dade is one of the few large cities in the country that has reached what is called effective zero, as determined by the Interagency Council on Homelessness. Yes, they have. We are still working in our community to reach that same goal. We have come close a couple times, but we have not been able to sustain that same sort of ability to always be able to rapidly rehouse a veteran experiencing homelessness.
As evidence, even an article in the Los Angeles Times, we are seeing improved numbers. What we are doing now is vital work. All the work we do is to enhance. We're not thinking about the system to fix it, we're thinking about the system.
Thank you so much for making that comment, because I think that is really critical. As if we make it through phase one, as we go into phase two, there are over a dozen different agencies deeply involved in ending individuals' and families' homelessness within the community. Every dollar that they get, they are putting to extraordinary good use. What I'm hoping to do as part of the transition report is to just show, since before COVID, our permanent supportive housing programs and our rapid rehousing programs have been at 100% or very close to it. So any opening we get, we are immediately putting people in. I think we had, as someone referenced, the jail discussion before. If Sulzbacher had more money for their MHOP program, they would be able to immediately address more folks at first appearance. Right now, we have maxed out. They have maxed out their available funding and the units availability that they have. Ability Housing also has other permanent supportive housing that they take. They will only take very highly acute individuals. We could double the capacity and easily fill those slots.
And one of my thoughts on this is we could start a homeless trust based on, you know, with the funding that we currently have in the city, if we wanted to kind of at least build out this framework, build up what the trust looks like as it is now, kind of model it as best we can to what Miami-Dade has done, or do however we would like to. We could do that before the legislature votes on this and we see where that process goes.
Well, my reluctance in doing so,
okay.
We've got a plan in place.
Understood.
So before I take my seat, I think that the model that Michael talked about is really appropriate. Before we start to build out how we would want a trust to move, first we have to get through phase one, right? Like we have to unlock that opportunity. Speaking from someone who runs a nonprofit that would be involved in some way with this, our system of care here in Duval County is set up differently than the system of care in Miami today or even 25 years ago. Our continuum of care is a three-county continuum. They've always been a one-county continuum of care. There are different levels of funding, or different pass-through federal fundings at different levels that the trust actually administers. We have a different department right now that administers. So there's a lot of technical issues on how that would work and what the connection would be, again, between the city/county, the trust, and then the nonprofits. But that is a much longer conversation that I don't think that we can resolve, you know, and that's a phase two kind of thing. What Michael talked about, like looking at where we are now and what we could do is also something. And right now the city has not said our number one priority in ending homelessness is, you know, what that focus is. And then they can focus current money on it, with the idea that maybe there we can look at what the future, what would it take to actually meet those goals long term.
Understood. I just kind of brought that up from the perspective of I understand based on a conversation I had with Alan that we might have some members that are hesitant because we don't know the full strategy, the full plan for the next 5 years.
But I think that your point. I'm not a good lawyer. I'm not a lawyer
at all. Other than that, sir, I believe that's all I have. Yeah, Philip's giving out money? I didn't know this.
No, he's not. He's watching you get making sure it's
going. Philip Peterson, Councilor's office. Yes, sir. So there is $250,000, I'll say, you secured last year for CQLI purposes. It is sitting in a contingency right now. If those dollars are not spent or allocated, encumbered by September 30th, they will effectively roll off the table, fall back to our operating reserves, or fund balance, however you prefer to refer to them. So your options are, one, to do nothing, and that's what happens, and then you just haven't used those dollars. Two would be to appropriate them for a specific purpose. We just need that to occur prior to September 30th, so we are on a pretty much a time crunch. The third would be to appropriate those dollars to carry over into next year and come up with a purpose at a later time that you would have to come back with legislation at that point in time. But those dollars would then be available, give you a little bit more time to figure out a specific use for those dollars.
And so my inclination, unless we have a very specific purpose, and that's why I wanted to talk about that a little bit, to see if there is a specific purpose. I'm comfortable and hopeful that the Finance Committee will make the determination that $3.65 million that we've allocated to the Council Strategic Plan to support CQLI project stays in place. I don't know that we need to move roll over the $250 for that purpose. I'm inclined to put it back into the general fund, recognizing that unless we do have a specific purpose. So that's just kind of my take on it right now. I wanted to have Mr. Hicks come in a little bit. I've not had a chance to take a look at the affordable housing report, but my frustration is the fact that there's a lot of folks out there, yet another report, yet no action, and I don't want that to be the case. And if nothing else, I would love to see that $250,000 put in a position that jumpstarts any of the initiatives that I think are mutually agreeable between
the
CQLI Council report as well as the administration. I know you spent a great deal of time on this, and I don't know how much you want to talk about now with the prospect of this. The time for us to introduce the bill is running out. I think we could probably afford a one-cycle emergency, but we've only got essentially 2 weeks to do it. It's my understanding. So, Mr. Hicks, if you want to opine on where you see we see some alignment and an opportunity.
Sure. Thank you, Councilman.
Not at all.
I actually submitted the final report yesterday to the Deegan administration at 4:30 yesterday afternoon. Our report has 20 goals, 20 recommendations, strategies in terms of addressing the affordable housing crisis. So one of those goals is on homelessness. The $250,000 pot of money that's available, direction would have to come from the Deegan administration in terms of what they would want to spend that on. I'm actively this week reaching out to them to see if there's something that they want to look in this report since they received it yesterday, and get with your office on having those discussions. But I'm not at liberty to make that call today. But in terms of the goals, this is a public report. If anyone needs access to it, you can request it from the mayor's office. Funding, obviously goal number one. You have, we identified three separate goals, and within that we have action items, recommendations, and strategies. Goal number one is improve housing ecosystem, efficiency, coordination, and oversight. Goal number two is increase attainable housing construction and rehabilitation. And goal number three is strengthen housing and resident stability. And one of our focuses in this report is we did not want to step on the CQLI report. So specifically, I know y'all passed a tax exemption legislation earlier in the year for any developments going towards affordable housing. We didn't include that, although we do include recommendations to incentivize developers further. I know y'all are moving forward in terms of other recommendations in terms of housing at the moment. So we made sure not to include those. We wanted this report to stand on its own and complement the CQLI because our committee really took the 10 recommendations from your report and wanted to build on those. So I can tell you real quickly, goal number one in A, and we have it organized based off of priority for the short term, is we need to update the housing element of the 2045 comp plan with subcommittee recommendations, not only from our report, but from the CQLI report. So it's really specific and it gives guidance. But then we also need clear policy directives from the administration in terms of what are the goals over the next 4 to 8 years do we want to accomplish as a city. That's a short-term goal. A long-term goal is code enforcement reform or creating a landlord registry, either voluntary or mandatory. Program. And goal number two, obviously local recurring funding. It's vitally important to address this housing crisis. And to your comment earlier, Councilman Boylan, we have amazing organizations already doing amazing work on the ground. They just need a leg up. They just need a boost. So making sure we're creating not only dedicated funding, but also finding that funding from other sources. And then raising awareness for developers on available incentives, because in some of our meetings, some developers don't actually realize that incentives are out there to push developments forward. As a city, we need to get serious about gap funding to make sure that we're providing enough resources to them to make their deal profitable, so that they're not having to raise the rents on some of these deals to make that profit up. And then obviously supporting eviction prevention programs. We made sure it's not eviction protection, it's eviction prevention, because we're preventing evictions. We want to make sure to continue to provide homes over people's heads so that they do not become homeless, because it's a separate problem on its own, but it all relates to housing. So we're excited about this report we put together. It's about 22 pages, but it outlines a list of recommendations and strategy for the Deegan administration, and now it's going to be up to them and the city council to provide recommendations and legislation in hopefully later this year and next year in terms of moving this report forward. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and we made sure to make sure that this report's full of actionable items that we all can support. Alex Sifakis, president of JWB, he was vice chair of the committee. It passed 16-0 unanimously, and it was a bipartisan unanimous support report that we all felt really strongly about, because we all are aware that we have a housing and homelessness crisis. So. Yep. Exactly. 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 Sure. I'll reach out to I'll reach out to Scott Wilson and Brittany Norris and try to get that meeting set up either later this week or early next week with them. So yeah.
Yes.
And let me have that meeting first, because I can do that. Perhaps you and I can have another meeting after.
Very much so, and I'd love to expand that notice meeting to a few other members too, because sure. If we can get more folks on board, that'd be great. What is the last? What's the last date that we can move to get that 250 through an emergency? Okay, so we have a little time. All right.
Correct. And you mentioned United Way. I know they have $10 million currently that they're putting into eviction diversion programs and trying to find resources for a home repair. Our recommendation does have eviction protection in it, and one of them is, to your point, a home hardening program that we can actually support some of these tenants who aren't getting help from their landlords. The problem there, though, is, you know, if we support tenants and give them money to make the repairs their landlords aren't doing, what's the consequence to the landlord for not doing their job? So, but we do have a recommendation about a home hardening program that could get towards that, to where it sort of gives them a little leg up while we identify the landlords that need to be addressed through code enforcement and other processes. Yeah, they would be perfect. Exactly, and Jacksonville Housing Authority has subpoena power as well through the Section 8 and low income, so we could also use their available resources towards that to address it as well. Yeah, I mean, and our report recommends voluntary or mandatory. We're leaving it up to the administration. If it's voluntary, providing an incentive to some of these landlords to get on the list, because if you're an A landlord, you're going to want to, you know, be recognized. If it's mandatory, there's a few more hoops we'll probably have to jump through on the council and other things. But I think it is time to start identifying the bad and the good, so that we're making sure that the community has, like you said, all the information possible to make informed decisions. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you.
So for allowing me to, I'm always happy to do it. Everything, every time you speak, I learn something new, frankly, and I mean that sincerely. And I would like to continue talking for a little bit longer. We're over time by 3 minutes. I don't know what we're allowed to do with that. Are we allowed to speak for another like 10 minutes? Is that possible? If you're willing to do so, I did want to ask a few more questions about critical quality of life suggestions. So to the point that we just talked about housing. I wanted to ask, I want to know where your head is at with some of these other housing options. You just mentioned a registry that you might be on board with that. I was kind of considering, and I did have this conversation, with Mr. Hicks earlier this week, maybe having if I have a problem in my home, a dishwasher's broken, AC's broken, and my landlord, you know, refuses to fix it. Can we make it so that tenant is able to fix it on their own and then take the payment of the fix to that AC unit and hand it off to the landlord, something like that? Is that something that was explored?
Was not explored.
Okay.
We didn't get into that kind of thing. That was the work of the working groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I saw the solution.
Understood. You know, and I just kind of want to get your temperature on it.
Sure.
But other than that, I'm happy to hear about the registry. I know we have some active members of the community that are really concerned about how much it's costing to live in this city. And that's why the work you did was so important. With the $250, it potentially going to ERAP makes sense to me. I also don't want you to forget about CDCs and the work that CDCs do. I don't know if you guys kind of had a lot of work with them.
I personally work with the CDCs.
Great.
I understand the work that they do. Raising their level.
It did come into conversation, but I don't think it's a resource.
I have so many in my district now that many of them have kind of gone awry from where they started in the 90s. I think it's a very robust organization, right, if they get the proper funding and the proper buy-in from the community. But these are the folks that are the boots on the ground. And I think in a lot of these communities where a lot of homes are becoming dilapidated, their home repair programs, they physically do the work. You know, I know LISC is part of the funding source. I know United Way is part of the funding source. But these are the folks that actually do that work. All right. Well, you know, I look forward to hearing your next notice
again,
meeting.
As it relates to this,
you have, it's already happened.
Thank you.
thank you. I call this meeting to close. Thanks so much, sir.